Hello, NDO world. NDO Outliers are back. We are here for episode 3, as we're starting to get into the most exciting time of the year for me. Not the end of the season, but conference play. Mr. Coach Vic, how you doing today?
I'm good. Conference play sets the tone for the rest of the season. That's what it does.
Yep, I feel like out of conference is kind of nice. You get to, you know, a lot of coaches have different ideas of how they want to set it up. Is it, do you want to play against coaches you're familiar with? Do you want to play against teams that could make for a fun matchup, challenging matchup, to each their own? But really for me, out of conference is trying to get to know your team. And then once you have that, you're headed into conference play, you're doing battle. One thing that I've always loved, especially being in a mid-major conference, it feels like the conference pride is high. Everyone is rooting for everybody else. Everyone wants that other team to get the, you know, knock off that power team. But then once everyone's in conference play, it's like, all right, we're all buddy-buddy. It can wait till bowl season. Now we're here to do battle. I've always liked that.
Exactly. I agree totally about that. Me, since I knew about Sam Houston State and I already played with them, I just wanted to have fun and out of conference. I didn't really, like, care too much about, you know, setting up how I want to play or anything like that. It was just about having fun, to be honest with you. But now in conference is serious. We're serious now. We're definitely serious. And I definitely feel the camaraderie throughout all the lower tier conferences. I feel like it didn't get any better than our season 30 Mountain West squad. I feel like it didn't get any better than that. Like, we was all for each other, win or loss, in conference, out of conference, bowl games, whatever.
Oh yeah, for sure. We'll definitely be talking about the Mountain West a little bit today. But before we get there, let's talk about some games that happened in Block 2 that, win or lose, may have been a little bit surprising. Or I guess maybe teams, depending on how you want to go with this. The first one that jumped out to me, team that I know well because I had them a couple seasons ago. That season you talked about in the Mountain West, New Mexico. Coach Bearass had a good season last year. Winning season, won his bowl game. I'm looking at him coming back. He went into the draft, and hey, that camaraderie in the Mountain West, a lot of returning coaches. They returned 9, I believe. Came back. Same team. You feel like things are going to get off to a great start because he already knows what he's, you know, he already has an idea of what he wants to do with the team, what works and what doesn't work. And man, he's had it rough so far. 1-3 to start the season. Lost by 25 points plus to Tulsa and Fresno State. So that first conference game, you know, getting that in and already being 0-1. But defensively, I think that's really what's been the struggle for him so far. 4 games, allowed 135 points, 128 in points allowed, so close to last, and then 131st in passing defense. And I don't have the run number off the, you know, rush defense off the top of my head, but I know that that's in the bottom quarter too. So a tough loss to open the season, but outside of that, the defense just really has struggled so far in out-of-conference play. I'm really hoping that Coach Bearass can get that defense together and turn things around once he gets in the conference way. Maybe the familiarity with the teams will help. I'm really hoping that he can turn things around.
The team I want to talk about that's been surprising for me, both good and bad, is Marshall. Marshall did beat Michigan State on the road. They had Washington State on the ropes, but blew that lead. But then to get shut out by San Jose State, like, I mean, when it wasn't just a shutout, it was a belt-to-butt whooping. He had a total of about 5 rushing yards in total for the whole entire game. 5. Yikes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He had almost as many interceptions as he did rushing yards. He had 4 interceptions. So, Sergeant Lingus, you gotta step it up. Once we come to conference play in the Sun Belt, Sun Belt is the fun belt for a reason. There are some tough teams in that conference. Getting 4 yards is not going to get it done. We need you to come back around to the Michigan State Marshall that gained over 400 total yards. Need that Marshall for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's really been a tale of two seasons for him. You look at if you take that first half against the Washington State game and put that together with his wins, look at how his offense looks. But then the second half, really struggled getting anything offensively going against Washington State. And then the loss to San Jose State, just it was a rough 6 quarters offensively. So I like to think that he'll turn it around, but at least get it out the way now and then focus going into conference play. Another team
Yeah,
that, or go ahead,
I
go ahead.
believe he will. I'm sorry. I believe he will. I believe he will get it turned around.
I'm hoping so. That offense is, when his offense is running, that is a really fun team to watch. Another team, speaking of having some concerns late in games, Middle Tennessee State. So they lost to Western Kentucky, like obviously with the NDL Sports Center. I got a really close look at that game. Some mistakes made in the second half, some, tough throws, maybe check out, run the ball, just live to fight another down. He's played well in the first half. In the games he's lost, though, the second half has been a recurring theme. He's able to get the lead going into the half, and then in the second half, just not able to find ways to get the game home. So the question is it maybe a play calling thing, a little bit too much of a pass to run ratio? Is it the other coach being able to adjust and then you have to readjust to what's happening? I'm not sure. He's going to have to figure it out really soon, though, because he only has one game next block, and it's against the big dog in the yard, Central Michigan. So definitely got to get that fixed ASAP if you want to be competitive against the Chips.
The other surprising result is Black Rain over there at UNLV. He had a solid win against aforementioned Western Kentucky. And he does have two ranked games against Ohio State and Penn State. Boy, that is a tough combo right there. Ohio State and Penn State both on the road. So can he continue the momentum at 2-0? Black Rain is a person who doesn't really talk in the NDL or anything like that, but he knows that school inside and out, and he knows that offense. He can make that go-go offense for UNLV work. Passing, rushing, he's pretty much balanced. Having played him before, he's a pretty much a balanced coach. Whatever's working, he's gonna work with that. If the run is working, he's gonna run it. The pass is working, he's going to pass it. So those two games, Ohio State and Penn State, both on the road, if he can somehow split that matchup, those two matchups, he can definitely challenge for the Mountain West.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because clearly we know that he's going to be an underdog going into both games, even if he was at home. Those are two really talented teams paired with the good coaches. This is one of those things I think that will turn into what kind of confidence are we going to get going into conference play? Because even if he were to go 0-2, you're playing with house money. The games that you really needed to win out of conference, you did. In terms of, the team overall. So these are just freebies now. So the question is, can you go on the road? Can you be competitive? Can you have a good showing? Can you walk away from those games knowing win or lose what we're doing so far is working, and will that transition well in the conference play? Or do you go into those games just everything's completely falls apart, and then you're coming out of it not sure, not having a plan, and having to try to readjust everything on the fly going into conference play. So I'm really curious to see how those games look for him.
To add on to that, looking at his schedule, like we've harpened on a lot when it comes to Tulane or USF or anybody like that, he already has a Power Four victory over TCU, which was a playoff team last season. So, like, if he can split Penn State and Ohio State to get two Power Four victories, that loom large down the stretch.
Yeah, especially with getting a second one would mean beating one of those two teams on the road, and those are tough places to play. So that looks really good on the resume for sure. So then that begs another question. We're two blocks in. Everyone's headed into conference play. Yes, some teams will still have some out of conference games maybe later on in the season, SEC style. But the question may be, what team has impressed you the most so far coming through the first two blocks? I'm going to throw you a curveball here. I'm going to go to South Alabama. They're 2-1 on the season. They love to score points. Because two of those games, they scored over 40 points. Problem is, as a whole, they're not stopping anyone either. 31 points allowed per game. Gio Lopez has looked great so far at quarterback. Just under 900 yards passing at 892. He's got 13 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So you have that nice positive over 2-1 TD interception ratio that you need. And he's able to run the ball well. Bullock's got 289 yards on the ground. So there is a balanced attack there. He's able to close out games with the run. He's able to move the ball through the air. Just have to see once conference play starts what that defense is going to look like, maybe as those overalls start to get a little bit closer.
And indeed, well, I will throw another curveball at you and take USF.
Mr. Joker's Rocky Top.
Mr. Jokers. Yes, sir. Rocky Top, it is. He is 3-0 so far. Do love his style of play. I played him in the Cup. He does have a great style of play. He is balanced. I love the balance attacks. I definitely love balance attacks. And he's working through the kinks, but he's getting it done. 3-0, has 139 points in those three wins. He has two Power Four victories. As we said, the Power Four victories are very important. He's averaging over 500 yards total in the game. Byron Brown has 12 touchdowns, and his wide receiver, Atkins, has six of those 12. We'll talk about a game coming up in this next block that's very important. But I feel like, as he did last season with Sam Houston State, I feel like, and we haven't talked about him much. We have not talked about him much, and that's our fault. He had his personal issue right there that he couldn't play right away. So that's probably why we did forget about him, but we are not forgetting about you anymore. Plus, he has the best podcast in the NDL. Gotta mention that.
Oh yeah. Great watch. Great listen for sure. Oh, good stuff. It's crazy to say that. Like you said it and it just made me feel bad. You said he's working out the kinks and he's over here averaging 500 yards of offense a game. Some of us will work out those kinks and not even get close to those numbers. So I am terrified to see what it looks like when it's, a fully baked meal,
Exactly. And he said as much to me. He was working at the Kings when we was playing our Cup game because, like, I knew what he had going on in his personal life that he couldn't start right away. He was kind of absent, so he couldn't start right away and couldn't get as many games in as he wanted to before the season. So, yeah, he's still working out the kinks.
Man. Well, maybe another team that I could at least speak to in personal conversations working out the kinks that may come as a surprise is Tulane. Undefeated to start the season. I have a sneaking suspicion that he may come close, if not break the top 25 in the coaches poll next week. Got two of the two power wins. We talked about that before, Nebraska and Washington, but looking at the stats, it's all about the efficiency. Mensa at quarterback, completion percentage of just under 78%. Five touchdowns, one interception. Balanced attack is you have your running back and man, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I know Williams is the receiver, Mario Williams. I definitely should know the running back. I just had this team last season, but I cannot remember. But they both got a couple of touchdowns. The key thing, though, I like is on the defensive side of the ball, just lets you know how things are when different people have the team. Hughes, thank you. I should know because I literally ran that man into the ground. Never came off the field. Chris Rogers, when me and Wes talked in private, I told him I look at I'm a Buccaneers fan, IRL, and Todd Bowles like to talk about chess pieces. Called Devin White a chess piece, and that's an interesting one. But you know, he did play better at times. Antoine Winfield a chess piece. Chris Rogers is definitely a chess piece. He is a very sneaky guy in the mid-major conference. I've heard Pat and others talk about East Carolina and some of the sneaky things you can do defensively with them because of the speed that they have. Chris Rogers is a guy as a linebacker with 90 speed that can cover and can rush the passer. Whatever you need him to do, he's capable of doing. It looks like Wes has found out how to use him. He leads the team in tackles. He's got two picks already on the season and has a touchdown. His speed makes it calling defense can be so creative because you can come out in 4-3 and feel like you're not at a disadvantage, or you can come out with a two linebacker defense, and his speed essentially makes it a one linebacker with a bunch of, a bunch of speed in the secondary. So you have all kinds of creative ways to use this defense. I'm really curious to see how things will go for him going forward. I'll be watching Rodgers for sure.
Definitely, he is a team to look out for. I mean, and like I said, with the game coming up in the next block, that could be outlier game of the year material. The next team I'm going to talk about that's been impressive is FAU. FAU is a newcomer to the league. This is his first season, and he definitely took FAU, and he's taking the NDL by storm with those points. He is 2-0 with wins at Army and at FIU, big rivalry game. He has his wide receiver Tucker with 224 yards on five catches with three touchdowns, and his running back Campbell with 300 combined yards and three touchdowns. So he is spreading the ball around. So as I said, I love balanced attacks. One more time, I'm going to say it. I love balanced attacks. I try to be as balanced, but I love seeing balanced attack. I love seeing the mix of the pass and the run equally. So shout out to Coach Jumper. Hopefully he can continue his run and be a third team in the mix in the American with Jokers and with SSI at Tulane.
Oh yeah, we'll have to see, and definitely want to speak to the balance. It's lovely to see from the offensive side because things just seem to flow smoother. It opens up the playbook because everything is possible. But what really stands out to me is when you have a balanced offensive attack, it is a nightmare defensively. Because normally I feel like you want to try to take something away, whether it's a player, whether it's the run or pass as a whole, and try to force a team to be one-dimensional. But when you have a team that's balanced that can do everything well, what do? It almost feels like it's just the game just evolves into you just panicking on every defensive play call as you're trying to guess what they're doing, guess where the ball is going. You don't really get to lock in on anything. And this makes it a lot tougher to come up with stops on the defensive side of the ball.
Definitely have to guess on defense, and it's definitely a guessing game to see which way that coach is going to go. Are they going to go run? Are they going to go pass? You also got to watch tendencies when doing a balance attack. Will it be a balance attack but predictable? Like, oh, he may do pass and run, but does he run on first down? Does he pass on third down? You would have to determine as a defensive coach what happens there and adjust on the fly. But gotta love the balanced offenses around the NDL.
Yeah. Well, there's one offense that wasn't really balanced in the last game. And that's okay because, hey, at the end of the day, you're trying to do what works, right? If the team can't stop the pass or stop the run, guess what? You're going to probably keep seeing that a lot. And Ball State and
Definitely.
Barkley saw that against CMU. The Chips get the win. They stay undefeated. Marion with 164 yards on the ground, 38 rushes for the Chippewas offense to 7 passes. The defense chipping in with 2 defensive scores. Watching that game, listening to Coach Chip talk him, like, kind of talk us through it. Hey, this team is not stopping the run. They're having a hard time in the trenches. Guess what? We're just going to keep this kind of simple. We're just going to keep running the ball until they show that they can stop it. Ball State couldn't stop it. And that's how that game turned out. So good job by the Chips for saying, hey, we're not even trying to play around in this game. This is working. We're going to stick with it. We're going to vary how we run the ball. But until they show that we can stop it, Emmanuel, just keep turning and handing it off.
It's nice to have that option. Just let's just run the ball. Just keep running. No. Keep running. It's nice to have that. It's nice to be balanced, but it's nice to also be dominant in one phase of the game as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked about some surprising teams, talked about some team or results, I should say. Some teams were impressed without a conference. But now that conference play is about to start, there might have been a couple of teams that have had, we'll say, maybe a little bit of a rough start to start the season. So we need to, kind of refocus. Now the games matter in terms of trying to represent the conference and the conference championship. Who's going to bounce back? SDSU, probably at the top of my list. Oh, man, watching them, they had a lead at home against Indiana, couldn't hold it in the last couple of minutes. They were up 17-0 at the half against Miami. Had an amazing user pick, Big Z with an amazing read on a user pick on fourth and goal. And then ended up throwing a pick six a couple plays later. Just needed a first down to get out of Miami with a win. So two tough losses for him. But now get to refocus, focus on the Mountain West. He's a back-to-back Mountain West champ. He knows his opponents well because not only do you know the teams because you're playing the same schedule, but a lot of those teams have the same coaches. So you have an understanding for how they play, what they like to do. And then for him, he has the ultimate weapon, probably the top a top two, depending on where you rank the other guy, the top two player in the Mountain West with Jayshon Pope. 3 touchdowns, elite plus speed. You always have to watch him. And because of the limitations with the secondary in terms of speed in the Mountain West, he is very scary. Not only can he blow you off over the top, he can take a drag route for a big play, but just the attention that he demands opens up so many other things for the Aztec offense. So I look for him to bounce back once we get into Mountain West play.
Another thing looking to bounce back in the Mountain West is Boise State. They are 0-2, but both losses are to ranked teams. One was against a certain somebody that's on the other side of this podcast, and another one to Tennessee as well. Well, Genty be able to still dominate? He has been dominant. Especially the last 2 seasons, winning the Heisman in both seasons, can he bounce back and be able to be dominant? And the emergence of Mattson, the quarterback, he has to make sure that he is throwing the ball more than, normal, because everything revolves around Genty. So if everybody's putting 8 in the box or run blitzing or anything like that when it comes to Genty, you got to be able to throw the ball, especially throw the ball downfield.
Man, I feel bad for the Mountain West. They don't have. I said Polk is one. He is the other one I was referring to. There is really no defense that is in the Mountain West that really can It's sometimes about, like, in basketball, when you look at that superstar player, like, hey, look, they're going to get their points. All we can do is try to make them work as hard as they can to get, their 30 plus points. And that's all you can do. And that's how it is with Ginty. Like, he's going to get his yards. Coach Irock is going to run the football. You're going to have a hard time stopping it. That's just how it is. But you're right. That game that we didn't really want to talk about, Madsen probably had. I could probably be honest. I think in all, I've known Coach Irock since, man, 1999, so a long time.
That's a long time. That's a long time.
That is, of all the times I've seen him play football in the NDL, in Madden, in NFL 2K, that is the best passing performance I've seen him have. I hated that it was against me for sure, but I've never seen him pass the ball like that. It seemed like every time he passed, it was perfectly set up. So I'm really curious because we've had talks and, talks in private. Man, if you could just pass the ball just a little bit more, it just opens up Ginty so much more because it softens the box. If
Oh
he's
yeah,
gonna
it
pass like
definitely
this,
does.
I'm terrified for the Mountain West, especially knowing against San Diego State, man. The real difference in those games, those were games that came down to the last possession. If you could just get an extra first down, if you could get an extra score in the passing game, it puts extra pressure on that San Diego State offense. So that's something that we're going to have to see how that evolves going forward in the season.
Yeah, we definitely do. We definitely do because if he can open up the pass, that'll like you said, that'll bring out everything in Genty. Like you don't have to wear him down as much as you had in the past. Like it'll be times where the wear and tear on Genty is all the way red throughout his whole body in the fourth quarter because you've had to run him and run him, but with the emergence of the pass, and you can implement Ginty in the pass game. You can also implement him in the pass game. So I would look for him to do that as well. Implement Ginty in the pass game to make the pass game more prevalent.
Yep, that's a good point. Because usually, when you get the running back in the involved in the passing game, not just screens, but swing passes or even just checkdowns, most of the time you have more space to work with. As opposed to when you're running the ball, everyone's coming after you. It's a lot harder to get into that open space in order to make someone miss to break a big play. I mean, he still does it, but it's a lot easier in the passing game because the running back tends to not be the focus. You're focused on receivers, and he does have weapons at the receiving position. And then the last thing we'll talk about here that I have, Liberty. So I believe they're an 84 overall, a solid overall, one of the hires in the group of five, 1-1, lost season or conference play opener, conference opener to UTEP. So that not the way you want to start out conference play, but against New Mexico, going into the fourth quarter, it seemed like they were just a step behind, but they showed a lot of grit and toughness, being able to get the win there. Great defensive play in overtime, the second and the third. I mean, even thinking about it, you missed an extra point that would have gave you the lead and still able to kind of lock in and say, okay, we blew an easy opportunity. It's fine. We'll get to overtime. We'll get the stop that we need to get. So they have a really, really skilled team. Now that he's had a couple of games, Coach Wasik has had a couple of games under his belt. Wonder how much different this team may look. A couple of tweaks here and there, offensively and defensively, going into like full-on conference play. I think this will still be a team to keep an eye on.
A couple other teams to keep an eye on. They don't need to necessarily bounce back, but they're 0-0, which is Rice and UConn. What are your thoughts on either one of those teams?
Well, full disclosure, I may or may not have had both those teams in the media draft as my group of five teams. So let's just say I have vested interest in both of those teams, but they're both coached by great coaches. Dave at UConn, He's great defensive user play. He has great instincts. He knows that team very well. I expect him to do good once we start to get, like, once he starts to get his feet under him and get into some games. Same with Rice. Sure, he's busy with track season, but Coach Boss Ranger, he's looked good so far. Boston College before had to deal with the Ole Miss curse and still turned out to have a good season, even dealing with a really weird team. I think he'll do well. Just don't listen. Like, I hope your dad didn't listen to the advice I gave in PTD. Just got to get the one. Got to be dad. Do what you got to do, and then just go on with your season. Show dominance.
Definitely beat dad. And like you said, you're right with Dave. UConn, he knows that team. He loves that team. I believe that's his alma mater, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember, but I know he's coached them. I'm pretty sure it is. I'd have to say that'd be the reason why he's had them so much in the NDL. It helps
Yeah.
that they have the, you know, now they're independent, but still, even when they weren't, when they were in the Big East, he was still the coach, so.
Yeah, so I believe that's his alma mater. So you definitely want to show your school pride with that. With conference play starting, which conference are you most excited to watch in conference play?
Man, it's a tough question. There's good stuff to look at in every conference. There's, you know, a good group of coaches, some interesting matchups, and just kind of want to see how things pan out in the standings. But I have to give a big shout out here to the Mountain West because not only do they have a great group of coaches, but a lot of them are returning coaches. So I think it's a lot of times when you get into the group of five conferences, the scary thing is, am I going to get all of my games played? Because I feel like either someone got fired and it was a day two pick, and they may be a little bit less committed than they were in a power conference, or it's someone new to the league and you're worried about, hey, they've got a couple of games, they're getting a couple of games under their belt. Uh-oh. They started 1-2, or they started 1-3. Are they just going to magically get busy and not have time to play anymore? Kudos to the Mountain West because so far, they have not had this issue at all. Returning coaches, up and down, they know each other well. Some coaches are playing for the third or fourth time this game. So it's going to be one of those things when you look at chess. I know this team because I've had this team. I know this opponent and this opponent's team because we've played multiple times. Can I add a new wrinkle on either side of the ball that might catch them off guard? What adjustments can be made after you've played someone so many times? So these matchups will be really fun to watch because just trying to see the little cat and mouse game, who can get that little extra edge by just tweaking one thing just a little bit, that could be the difference in a couple of wins.
The conference I have is the American Conference. Man, oh man. I love what I'm looking at in the American Conference. Last year, you had my co-host and you had Coach Pat ballot out throughout the whole season. And you guys represent the American Conference very well. This year, we have Coach Jumper, who we mentioned before, Coach SSI, who we mentioned before, and Coach Jokers, who we mentioned before, looking like front runners in that conference. But you also have Coach Razorback with ECU, got Coach Toro with Navy, you got Coach Boss Ranger with Rice, you got my guy Drew Bacca over there in North Texas, you got Shady Nasty over there in Memphis. You got I Crashed My Car, which may or may not be Dale Earnhardt Jr. with Charlotte. And we got Coach Texas Fan with Tulsa. All those teams can cause a threat or can be in the top two or three in the conference. This is going to be a highly, highly contested conference. I don't really see anybody going undefeated per se, but I can see a three-way tie for one loss in conference. I can see a three-way tie with one loss in general with this conference. That's how highly I think of this conference.
Yeah, a lot of talented teams and coaches there. I mean, offense seems so far to be the thing that has been running season 32. Teams putting up a lot of points, a lot of yards. But man, this conference can be different. USF has some playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, as does Tulane, as does East Carolina. So I just don't know how this is going to pan out. And then Memphis, you mentioned Shady Nasty earlier. He's 0-1. Memphis is a really talented team. MGR did great with them the two seasons that he had them. There's just really, it's really tough to put a point of finger at if this team is going to be the team that can run away with it. I have my, you know, I may think Tulane or South Florida or maybe even Rice may have a leg up, but it's just, it's hard to tell because the mixture of talent and coaches in terms of player talent and coaches, it's just, it's really difficult. We'll just have to see over the next couple of blocks how this race evolves.
Exactly. And to pair that with your pick of the Mountain West, deep conference, always been a deep conference, always been very great coaches. Like I said, Big Z, Iraqa, they ruled the conference. But I definitely have to shout out my boy, Old Man Wobbles, and my guy, Beer Cop, and my guy, Jeff Daddy.
Jay Pono.
And GMF and Pono. And coach, the coach, Dak Sire or Dak Charter, hopefully I'm saying that right, with Wyoming, he got them 2-0. So we can potentially look out for them as well.
Yeah, some good coaches in the conference. A lot of good coaches in the Group of Five conferences this season. Well,
yes.
It seems that this next block is going to be interesting. There's some games to look at. I know there's one in particular that you want to talk about, so I'll let you have the floor for that one first, because that is definitely a massive game.
Well, mainly, I'm going to call an audible. I'm actually going to call an audible. Mainly because what I want to do is, like we kind of did last week, and his edit video kind of set the tone for kind of what I want to do with this, as well as what you may want to do with this. And that's put a game or teams in the spotlight. So one game we're going to talk about, and the other games that we have on the rundown, we're going to change it up. I'm going to give you a pick. We're going to go back and forth. We have four games. I'm going to start. Who do you have? Oregon State or Colorado State? Who you got?
Oh, man. I didn't even think about picking on picking who would win these games.
Give me your audible.
Yeah, so CSU's hosting this game.
Yes.
And no conference games yet, so they're looking at a final tune-up before heading into conference play. Two longtime vets in the NDL, Doc and Beer Cop. Got to go with the Mountain West. CSU does have some talent. I know Oregon State's not a bad team either. Got to get the run game going and got to get Horton the ball. I think they find a way to win and get a nice solid win and then turn their focus on the conference play.
Okay. And who do you have? I will take the second and fourth game on our rundown. So I'm going to give you the third, which is Charlotte at East Carolina. Who you got?
I'm going to go with East Carolina here. This is a tough one. So, one of my favorite kind of matchups to have, someone who's a longtime vet and Coach Razorback, and then Carr is someone who's new to the league. So Charlotte has looked good offensively at spots. It's definitely, from what we've seen so far, more of an offensive-based team. East Carolina, though, They've got some weapons. He seems locked on Garcia as his quarterback now, but they have a unique ability defensively that a lot of teams in a group of five don't have. They have enough speed in the back seven that they can make things really, really difficult. You're probably going to have a first or second round corner here picked next week that can just shut down his side of the field. I think Razorback will find a way to slow down that Charlotte offense and walk out of this with the win.
All right. So I have Boise State and Washington State. I'm going to go with Washington State. Coach Lick, that man does a lot for the NDL, for one. Two, he loves him some Washington State. Three, I don't think he's lost to Ira. So he has all that going for him. Mattson can be a factor if he gets him going, but slowing down Mateer, it's gonna be almost impossible for Boise State. And the other game is Dr. Bush and the Fighting Chips and Middle Tennessee State. Of course, I'm gonna go with my conference mate in Middle Tennessee State to pull the upset. I'm going full on Lee Corso. Not so fast, my friend. Middle Tennessee State, if he can just cut down on the turnovers and just adjust in the second half, he can possibly pull off the upset. Chip, of course, has to stay the course and continue the ground game and ground and pound, but I feel like Middle Tennessee State can get the job done with their passing attack.
That's interesting. I have two things to add. One, for that game, something that I'll be looking at for Central Michigan, they've been able to play from a point of strength because they've had the lead in their game so far. Now, the passing game hasn't really gotten going for Central Michigan, so I'd be curious if they get behind. Is Bert Emanuel going to be able to handle the load? We know he can on the ground, and it adds a unique threat that a lot of teams don't really have of a quarterback who reminds me a lot of Michael Vick, honestly. Eric Crouch, a guy that is able to make enough throws, but his speed makes you have to have a spy, or you have to be very selective in how you blitz because you can't let him break out of the pocket. If they get behind, what does that passing attack look like? We haven't seen it yet this season. I'd be curious to see if Middle Tennessee was able to get a lead early, what that looks like. And then for
Now,
Boise, I'll just add one thing.
go ahead.
So
Go ahead.
I just know this because obviously being Coach IROC talk, he has a win against Lick when Lick was at Wyoming, but last season definitely did not go well when he had Washington State. So I'm assuming Lick, knowing his players better and Washington State obviously having a more talented defense, made life a lot tougher for Ginty and company. So now that IROC has seen that defense, how will he be able to adjust in a rematch this season?
That is true. That is true. Hopefully he can, but I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I think Mateer would be too much for him, passing and running.
Oh, that leaves one game, the big one. Definitely the one that has the spotlight for all the group of five for sure. The AAC Tulane, who may be ranked, may not be ranked, they'll be close at USF, who is ranked and will stay ranked. They're both undefeated. It is a conference game, so it's not just important for a potential quality win if we're talking about, looking down the road at the CFP, but getting into the conference championship game. It'd be really important you get a leg up on one of the top teams to this point in the season. Which defense is going to be able to get stops? USF has put up a lot of points. Tulane, very efficient passing the ball, balanced as well. They both have had a couple of solid playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. How does this game look? Is it going to be a high scoring game, a low scoring game? Is it going to come down to a stop at the end?
I believe it's gonna be a middle of the road scoring game, like a 27-24 type of game. Not necessarily high scoring or low scoring, but in that middle, like 30, between 21 and 30 points. I feel like the team that's able to adjust in the second half with their defense, not their offense, but with their defense, the coach who can adjust well in the second half with their defense will win the game. Like you said, this is a huge conference game. This is the de facto tiebreaker right here. Head to head, you can't get no better of a tiebreaker than head to head. So this is an important game for both teams. If both teams want to make the CFP, like you said, Tulane is on their way to becoming ranked. USF is already ranked. So that's a leg up on all of the competition in the American, plus any other conference. If both teams become ranked and you get a win over a ranked team, plus what these teams have already did out of conference with two, possibly three Power Four victories, man, 2 to 3 Power Four victories and a ranked win on top of that. That's just solidifies CFP right there if you're able to make it throughout the whole entire conference throughout the season.
Yeah. Either one of these teams run the table. They definitely are sitting near the front when we're talking about that one spot that's available, given what they've done so far. I wonder, do you think home field advantage is going to play any impact in this? South Florida being at home, do you think that has any impact on this game?
It could. The momentum could factor in through the home field advantage. Neither stadium is just rocking with enthusiasm. More so if they were playing in Tulane because that's more of a campus type stadium. Because I know USF really plays at Raymond James Stadium. So it's basically an NFL type vibe. So it may not be as raucous as it could be if it was at Tulane, but the momentum of being at home, it can carry you through.
Well, then I'll have to ask you the ultimate question. Given all that you said, who you got?
Yeah, ooh. I'm gonna go with Jokers. I'm gonna go with Coach Jokers and USF. I feel like his balanced, high-powered attack can get him through, and I feel like he can get the necessary stops he needs to come out with the victory. Who you got?
I want to go with Jokers as well, but I'm going to go with Tulane, and here's why. Now, his numbers may not look as great as Joker's numbers. Still impressive, but I mean, clearly it's really hard to compare with averaging 500 yards on offense. This legitimately looks like video game football. The thing about Tulane, Wes has a really good defensive line. And so I'm not just looking at being able to help stop the run. You've got Allen, you've got Huntington, and you've got Jenkins in the middle. Jenkins is an impact guy. So what you just really need, you don't need to get stops per se. You just need to slow guys down. You need to get yourself into third and manageable from a defensive standpoint of seven or more, so you can kind of dictate what the offense has to do. Force them to pass. Tulane has enough speed. I mentioned earlier, you can go out in a 3-2-6 with Rodgers being a linebacker. That turns that really into a 3-1-7. You have so much speed on the field, it could lead to some risky throws that you might have been able to get away with against other teams, but Tulane does have good speed in the secondary. Maybe they close a throw or two. That's a knockdown. That's a punt. That's an interception. That's field position. I just feel like Wes is going to be able to get enough plays. Third down is going to be the important stat to me, though. If he can get stops on third down, I think he has a great chance of pulling this one off on the road.
I feel like that's the game winning stat is third down stops. Whoever gets the most third down stops is going to win the game.
I think you have a fact that you wanted to share. I'll save the last for last. Surprise you here with a change.
Oh yeah. The ball knowers out there in the NDL. Ball knower fact of the week is, what year is the greatest Heisman Trophy race? I will go ahead and spoil it. It is 1997. It gets no greater than this year, only because the top five of that year goes as in order. All five of these guys are college football Hall of Famers. Four out of five should be pro Hall of Famers, but once I get to number five, you know why. Number one, the person who won the Heisman, Charles Woodson, pro football, college football Hall of Famer. Second is Peyton Manning, the sheriff. Nothing else needs to be said.
As Jiggy says, the GOAT. He is my favorite quarterback of all time, so I will accept no Peyton Manning slander.
I will not give any. I'm not giving any.
It's one of the few things me and Tennessee fans can agree on. Like, look, I'm not going to say anything bad about Peyton Manning. So, yeah, just get that out the way. You're good to continue.
I'm not giving any. I said what I said, but that doesn't mean he's not great. He's very great. Changed the quarterback position as we know it. Can definitely give him that. He definitely changed as far as preparation and all the blend and having control of the offense. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have that in today's game. Number three, poor guy. Ryan Leaf was number three. Ugh. Poor guy. He is a college football Hall of Famer, but yeah, those pros did not. Yeah. Number four, Randy Moss.
I did not know that. Really?
Yes. Randy Moss was number four. In his season, he had 25 TDs in 13 games. Think about that. 25 touchdowns in 13 games. Pro and college football Hall of Fame. Number five on the list. Now, he's tied for fifth, but he's still fifth. Ricky Williams, who won it the next year, but he was fifth this year. He is a college football Hall of Famer and should be a pro Hall of Famer. He has, I think, close to 12,000, if not over 12 to 13,000 total yards. And he has over 10,000 rushing yards for his career in the NFL. So he should be in the Hall of Fame. But you know, when you love the weed, the NFL doesn't love you. So you already know what happened there. So that is the ball nor fact of the week right there. The greatest Heisman Trophy race was in 1997. Three pro football Hall of Famers in the top five. All five are college football Hall of Famers.
Wow. I just will add one thing. Partly, I know this a bit too well because my dad's a Vikings fan. And we played, man, hundreds of matchups growing up against each other, Bucks against the Vikings. To this day, and I will stand by this statement, and I definitely know that this has been talked about before. It's talked about last season on PTD. Who's the greatest college football player in a, you know, EA game? No player, period, has ever given me as much hell as Randy Moss. Not Vic, not Reggie Bush, literally no one. Randy Moss was truly unstoppable. He completely changed how you had to defend. And even when you felt like he was covered, it didn't matter. No one has given me more headaches. There are definitely times I went to sleep pissed off because you can't stop them. It's like you almost have to concede a touchdown, maybe two, before the game starts and know you're playing from behind. Very few
He
people
was
have that impact.
a beast on any video game, college or pro. He was a beast. Him, Michael Vick, you know, someone who was underrated in the NCAA that was a total beast? Calvin Johnson. Oh my God. Total beast. Like, cannot guard him at all.
He's just a slower ran or slower Randy Moss. And it's not like he
Pretty
was
much.
super slow, but
So he was not, he was just slow by a tick, just by a little tick.
and you knew. Like that, I don't remember what the rest of Georgia Tech's offense looked like that year, but I feel like there really wasn't anyone else to worry about because you were worried about the run. And then
There
it was
was
him. So you knew if the ball was getting thrown, it was going to him, and it didn't matter.
There wasn't anybody. I believe the only other threat may have been Tashard Choice at running back one of those years, but his quarterback was Reggie Ball. Reggie Ball was as mid can go, and he was the only vocal point of those offenses at Georgia Tech. No, they did not run the option. It was a pro style. Chan Gailey was there as the coach during Calvin Johnson's time at Georgia Tech.
Interesting. Texanola also comments in the chat that Larry Fitzgerald's the best college receiver of all time.
He didn't have 25 touchdowns in 13 games. I just need people to let that sink in. 25 touchdowns, 13 games.
I don't remember Fitz. Hey. I remember Fitz playing in college. I know he was really good. But in like I'm just thinking of like a one game scenario.
Played at Pitt, the only the it's like two different games that he has like great like that I can remember. That was the bowl game against Oregon State, he went off. And then a game at Texas A&M, he had like three touchdowns, two of them in double coverage. He went off. He was very consistent, but he was no Randy Moss
Well, I tell you one thing,
or Calvin Johnson.
I may have to agree with Noel on this one for sure. He says that Branch will have 26. Given the way the season has started for USC, I'm not going to argue that at all. That Trojan offense is looking good, so he may when we get a season or two or a game or two and we're on NCAA 28. And we're looking back at, man, who are some of the greatest guys to have? Yeah, Branch. He is a nightmare to guard defensively for sure.
That's for sure. That's definitely for sure. So he might have 26. I will fully be confident in him saying that. So
Well, I got one more segment for you, sir, before we hop
okay.
off. It is WrestleMania weekend. I am a monster wrestling fan. So, in the spirit of the group of five being the mid-majors, I want to ask you, not sure how much of a wrestling fan you are, but who are some of the best
I may
mid-card?
surprise you.
Okay. Well, my question to you is, who are some of the best mid-carders of all time? Guys that have not won a heavyweight championship. They could have won tag team gold, maybe, the mid-card titles. It could be the US title, Intercontinental title, or maybe no titles at all. Is there anybody that stands out to you that had a great career but just didn't have that big championship to put them in the elite? And
Oh
I'll let you go first because I have a
man.
list of like seven guys. I'm not going to say them all, but I have a list.
I got at least five. I got at least five. Owen Hart.
Yes.
British Bulldog.
Yes.
Razor Ramon. We're not counting Sky Hall.
Rest in
Razor
peace.
Ramon.
Yes.
Definitely. Definitely. Curt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. Jake the Snake
I don't
Roberts.
know why I didn't say yes to that, but definitely yes.
And Jake the Snake Roberts.
Okay.
Ravishing Rick Rude.
I like your list.
Shout out Dustin Reynolds as well. Gold Dust.
Oh man, that is like the epitome of that is the epitome of mid-card. Oh man. I can't let this go off the rails. Oh man, I was not expecting you to say Gold Dust. You're not wrong though. Wow.
I told you I'm going. I told you I was going to surprise you.
Well, I'm gonna add one. He's a personal favorite. I don't think people will say he's the greatest in that conversation, but I'll add one, and then there are I'll kind of double down on a couple of guys. So the one I'm gonna add is Ken Shamrock.
Oh, I was just about to add him, man.
It was different because you had when he came into WWF at the time, he's coming from MMA. So you're coming into a different world. You're trying to fit into what they're doing. Was he great on the mic? No. But
He
his
didn't have to
instance,
be.
yeah, he didn't have to
He
because
didn't have to be.
they did a good job with his character. Like he's just a badass. He just beats people down. He took one of the just most raw chair shots you will ever see in wrestling. Not even Mick Foley. Dude took a chair shot from The Rock. You have to go look this up on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Took a chair shot from The Rock straight on. No hands up, nothing, just right to the face. Still remember that like it was yesterday. I'm like, I can't believe he did that. But I always had a ton of respect from him for him coming from the MMA world, fitting in. He didn't have a long career, but some of the feuds he had were great, especially the one with Steve Blackman. Like just things that they were
Oh
able to do
yeah.
is great.
Oh God. Yes. Two legit badasses right there, boy.
And then I'm gonna
I
double
need.
down on a couple. So
Go ahead.
one, Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig. I feel so bad for him, rest in peace. I feel so bad for him that he had the injuries to his back. Because he put on some amazing matches, both WWE, and he wasn't at his best in WCW, but I mean, with health, but man, just the match he had against Bret Hart,
Top
amazing.
five match. Top five match of all time.
It's an amazing match. I'm not counting TNA. No offense. Sorry, AJ Styles. I love you, but we're not counting TNA for this with Shamrock. And then I don't remember if you said him. I don't think you did. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Now I'm trying to remember because I have to think because I'm trying now. Now I'm going off the top of my head. I don't think he won
He
a
won.
heavyweight championship, did he?
He actually did. That's why I didn't count him.
I'll take it back then.
He won the WCW slash NWA World Heavyweight Championship in those series of matches that people of a certain age say is the greatest
Oh
series of
yeah,
matches
that's what Ric Flair.
ever.
I can't believe I
Ric
didn't
Flair.
remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Ric Flair.
Yes, he won. Flair won the first. Ricky won the second. Flair won the third, I believe, in the Superdome.
Well, I'll say this about Ricky then. If we're looking at mid-card titles and we're looking at the Intercontinental and US, like that level of title. One of the greatest matches of all time, not just WrestleMania, but just greatest. Macho Man against Ricky the Dragon.
Oh,
Definitely
yeah.
the best match of that WrestleMania. Don't let the superstars fool you. That was the match of the night for sure.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then shout out also, I mean, I know he doesn't count in this conversation, but Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, the Intercontinental ladder match. Yeah. Great match.
You know what's a very underrated match that is in my top five, top 10 matches ever? And people may laugh when I say this, but you got to look back at, if you really look at that match back, you'd be like, God damn. Shane McMahon versus Kurt Angle in 01 at King of the Ring is a top tier fucking match.
The one thing I remember most from the match is the obvious. No, Shane getting suplexed due to glass, but the fact that the glass wouldn't break.
Did not break. Did not break at all. Did not give.
Man.
Fell on his head a couple times.
Brutal, brutal, brutal. Well.
Great match. Great match.
Some good stuff. I'm definitely probably be a little bit busier this weekend with WrestleMania. I know it's Easter. I hope you have a good Easter, have some plans. I know for me, I'll be spending Easter weekend with my parents, and I will be watching WrestleMania with my dad and my grandma. So I'm looking forward to a good weekend.
I'll be watching WrestleMania both nights as well. A little bit of NBA playoffs. I got to see what's going on Easter weekend. I don't know if I just have plans like that, but we shall see. But I hope you and your family have a great Easter as well.
All right. Likewise, sir. Well, a little long this week, but that's okay. I'm always happy to get in some wrestling talk because the nerd in me always wants to get it out.
I surprised you, by the way. I surprised you. You did not think I had that in me.
Yep, I did not know. I was not prepared.
You was not prepared.
All right, well, good stuff. And we'll see next week. We'll be a couple of games in for some teams in conference play, and maybe the picture will start to become a little more clear.